Hey friends, it's Jenna Overbaugh here. I'm a licensed professional counselor and I'm here to help you do all the hard things, including busting through your fear, intrusive thoughts, and worry so you can live your best life. Some of my earliest memories were being anxious and I lived my life that way until I learned more about OCD and anxiety. Since then, I learned as much as I could and I've been helping people overcome their fear and worry since 2008. Over the years, I've acquired some of the best education, training, and empowerment tools to help you understand your brain a little bit better and to finally overcome all of that fear that's been holding you back. Now, if you're ready to learn more, let's get to it.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back, you guys, for another episode of All the Hard Things. I have someone here who I have been so eager to get on the podcast, and I was super stoked to hear that she was also eager to come on the podcast. This is Elise Lescarbeau. You might know her as OCD or Just Me on Instagram, and we have a lot in common. We really have a lot to say when it comes to OCD versus anxiety, OCD versus generalized anxiety disorder. How the concepts that we all teach here, you know, exposing yourself to uncomfortable situations, reducing avoidance, reducing safety behaviors, how it's all interconnected. And I'm really excited to jump in and I'll probably tell you guys some things about myself that I've never even told anybody else. So let's talk about Elise really quickly. I will let her share her experience as well. But just so you know, this is someone who has a ton of lived experience with mental health issues and diagnoses throughout her life. And she has turned that into a really strong, powerful advocacy platform. And that's where, like me, she channels her energy, channels her passions. And so super excited to share her with you. And we're going to get right into it. So Elise, thank you so much for being here. And I would love for you to start out just by telling us a little bit more about your personal story and lead us into how this bigger concept of what we're going to talk about today really found you, or like why that's so important to you.
Yeah, totally. So number one, I'm so excited to be here. I love your podcast so much. It was like one of the first things about like pure OCD that I learned about after getting diagnosed. So this is like a dream. But yeah, so I have a very, as you said, long history with mental health issues. I would say I probably started showing symptoms of OCD at like 5 years old. My brother got lost when he was like 2, and then I became obsessed with like watching him and checking that he was okay. And it was just chalked up to like, oh, she's an anxious child, whatever. And then at 14, I was experiencing really bad depression and anxiety. They diagnosed me with like bipolar, all these things, and classic like diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder, thrown into talk therapy, did not work for me. So I like managed, but all the while I was really keeping these obsessive thoughts to myself, these like mental rituals I was doing to myself. And it wasn't until actually September of 2022 that I actually was diagnosed. And I basically just like was in such a place. Me and my partner were in Europe of all places. And I just like had a mental breakdown and was just like completely not myself, just like very much overtaken by my OCD. And luckily was finally diagnosed by someone who like knew what they were talking about. And I was also honest about my symptoms for the first time. So yeah, since then, it's just been like such a revelation to not only know that I have a real diagnosable disorder for everything that's been happening to me, to realize I'm not crazy. It's not just me, hence my Instagram, but like I actually, you know, have a diagnosable and highly treatable disorder. So yeah, since then I went into ERP, went into ACT, and just like absolutely fell in love with the concepts. The first book I read that was actually recommended to me by my ERP therapist was The Happiness Trap by Russ Harris. And I have it like on my side table and it's like covered in highlights and tags and stuff. Like it just resonated with me so much. And I really since then have been I would say using these concepts in every single day of my life. Like I would say I'm definitely in the recovery phase, but I am still applying ERP and ACT skills, acceptance and commitment therapy skills, like every single day. And I just had this realization, like this is not, it is about OCD and it is about anxiety, but it's also just about like fear and doubt and uncertainty. And I think everyone in the world probably has that. So like all of these, you know, different techniques, exposing yourself, sitting with your anxiety can really truly apply, I think, to anyone to make their life like more in line with their values. So that's the, I guess, reason I started my Instagram. And yeah, started in November and it's just been like such a huge passion for me. I'm constantly reading up on, you know, different techniques, different books, and have some exciting projects coming up that I'm not going to share quite yet. But yeah, it's just been such an amazing journey and I'm so thankful for the OCD community. Your Instagram was hugely inspiring to me. So yeah, it's definitely been quite the journey, but it's been awesome to share and just gain that community on Instagram.
In everything that you've shared, obviously everyone has their own unique journey, but I've heard it a million times before, right? Like maybe you were predisposed to being an anxious child, you know, have some other things happening because we know it's not all about environmental stuff.
Right.
Then you have this thing happen, right? For me, people who are in my OCD and anxiety recovery blueprint, they know about my chicken story. I don't know even Elise if you know that, but maybe one day we'll get there. But that was something for me that like, oh, yep, I could pretty much like point all of my core fears and all of my stuff back to that situation. But we have this kind of trigger. We have this thing that kind of like pulls the gun or pulls the trigger rather. And it's just this situation from there on out. You get, you know, labeled with anxiety and you get labeled as having to go to talk therapy and it doesn't really work and you continue to struggle and settle for this like okay life.
Yep.
And I that's what I hate. I hate that. I don't want that for people because at best, what that does is it get people to settle for an okay life. You know, like maybe they're just anxious and that's always going to be the way that they are and they have to use these coping skills to get through the moment. Yep. And what they're missing is how to like seriously make their brain their bitch and just do whatever it is that they want, regardless of the presence of fear or doubt or whatever. And I love that you say, and I so agree, that this has so much more to do than just with OCD and anxiety, like how everybody can benefit from these skills. I can even name, I mean, two examples that come to my mind right now. I went to go and get coffee today. I went to my favorite coffee shop and got coffee. And I caught myself being really indecisive. And I'm like down the main street of Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. And I don't want this coffee, but I need to be home for this. And otherwise, I'm going to be late for this meeting. But I really want this coffee, you know, that's just, you know, it just makes my day so much better and it makes me happy. But what about this? And I'm going to be late for this. And then you really need to be spending my... And all of a sudden I drove by the coffee shop and I was like, wait, I just need to make a decision. Like there's no right decision. Like going to get the coffee or not going to get the coffee is there's no best decision here. I just need to make an effing decision and then suck it up, right? So I made the turn and I went and I got my coffee and I dropped it and I did the meeting from the coffee shop. That is something that OCD or not, of course, OCD can elevate those experiences and make them more difficult to manage and much more emotional. But that wasn't necessarily an OCD moment of mine. That was just me being a human and I needed [S2] Right. [S1] To make a freaking decision and just stick with it, right? And then let it go. Another example was, again, because I needed to take this meeting in the coffee shop. I'm always very self-conscious about my voice because I tend to be very loud and like overpowering, especially with headphones in. Like I have no concept of how loud I am.
And we are the same person, by the way.
I'm not socially anxious. Like I care what people think of me. That's not something that interferes with my life. But, you know, this unexpected coffee shop meeting, and here I am and I have to plug in my headphones and I have my coffee. But now I'm self-conscious about what other people are going to think. And is my voice too loud? Do I need one headphone in and not the other? You know, how am I going to navigate this? Should I just hurry up and go home or cancel the meeting? I'm like, no, what I want to do right now, what Jenna wants to do right now is just have the meeting and talk however I want to talk and whatever happens, happens, right? Like that's not something that I struggle with, but interwoven in those situations is a lot of treatment techniques that we teach people with OCD and anxiety, but it's like, we all need that. Like we all would benefit from that stuff. So I would love if you could give me some more juice as it relates to that topic. Like how do these kind of like day-to-day thoughts that people have And how does it relate to just like OCD and anxiety? And how can these typically thought of as just being OCD strategies for treatment, how can that actually help people in the real world who might not even have OCD or anxiety?
Totally. This is my favorite topic of all time. So I'm very happy to talk about it. Yeah. So exactly the examples that you just gave, you know, I think so many people think that that's just like how they are. And people just accept that, like, oh, this is, you know, I'm just an anxious person. I'm not diagnosable, but like, you know, this is just how I am. But there's so much with, you know, exposure and response prevention and ACT that can help. Like just understanding, like I think of it as like five main tenets. And the first one is literally just understanding your brain. Like I think there's, I know you talk about this a lot with psychoeducation. Like it's so important to understand what F is going on in your brain to begin with, right? Like, you have this emergency response system. It was developed from when we were in the hunter-gatherer days. And now, you know, it's as if we're using ancient software in modern times and we are reacting in a fight or flight response to things that are not actually life-threatening. But when we tell our brains, oh yeah, this is something to be scared of, let me do coping mechanisms or deep breaths or use a fidget spinner or whatever it might be, we're actually confirming to our brain, hey, this is something I should be afraid of, and actually prolonging that anxiety experience by getting that another, you know, shot of adrenaline when those things don't work. And it just makes you more anxious in the future. So I think that concept in and of itself is like, when you understand that, it can really shift like, okay, this is why I shouldn't react in this way. And this is like why, this is the impetus for actually, you know, trying to change.
If any of this is resonating with you right now, then you need to check out the OCD and Anxiety Recovery Blueprint. The OCD and Anxiety Recovery Blueprint is my no holds barred, real talk, three-part course for action takers who want to gain control over their OCD and anxiety and take their freaking life back. It is truly recovery like you've never seen before. I made this OCD and anxiety recovery blueprint because I was sick of the same old vanilla, recycled mental health content on social media, on the internet, and I wanted to raise the bar. I wanted to create a world where people could recover for good with or without a therapist. So the OCD and Anxiety Recovery Blueprint, you could get it all together. It's over 100 videos, over 35 hours of content, but you could also get one of its three courses. So we have the foundation, which is level one. This is where you will lay the groundwork for your recovery journey and truly step into your therapist role and realize ultimately how simple all of this can be when you commit to the process. Then level two, we have the transformation. This is where you would learn how to prevent rituals, including mental compulsions, dismantling all those other compulsions that really, really trouble you. You will come to understand that behaviors and mental compulsions are yours to control and never the other way around. Then we have the end game. This is where you will bulletproof your recovery no matter what exposures or challenges cross your path. I want you to take your life back into your own hands so OCD has nothing against you. If you want to learn more about the OCD and Anxiety Recovery Blueprint, just go to www.jennaoverbaughlpc.com/blueprint or head to the link in my show notes. I don't do vanilla. I don't do what's your subtype. I rip open the freaking curtains and take you into the inner workings of my mind and education so you can know this as well as I do. So again, to learn more about the blueprint, go to www.jennaoverbaughlpc.com/blueprint or head to the show notes and click the link below.
And then I think the second piece that I really got a lot of value from ACT is values, like actually knowing what you care about, what matters to you. And that completely differs by person, right? Like people try to say like, this is how you should live your life. Like it's actually really just what matters to you. Like for me, my values lie a lot with connection, having self-compassion, having compassion for others. And those are things that manifest in so many different ways. But like until I actually sat down and was like, what are my values? You know, I wasn't necessarily able to use that on a day-to-day basis to actually drive behavior change or drive, you know, what I felt like I should be doing. So yeah, I think knowing your values is super important, like having skills to actually understand and recognize when you're stuck in that cycle, like what can these things manifest as? I was actually watching one of your courses the other day and like just all the sneaky ways that OCD can show up or just anxiety or just being stuck in the anxiety cycle, right? Like, you know, it could be as simple as, I don't want to do this task right now, so I'm going to go get a cup of coffee. Like you're distracting yourself away from that, and that's reinforcing the anxiety cycle. So there's just so many like sneaky ways that it shows up. And beyond that, like actually intentionally exposing yourself to your triggers, right? Like I know that I'm training for a half marathon right now and I don't want to run. And it makes me anxious. But I also know that when I do it, I become less anxious because I'm telling my brain like, hey, you know, actually, I accept that you're having those thoughts that you don't want to do it, but I'm going to do it anyways. And then, yeah, the fourth piece is really just around like the core tenets of ERP and ACT, which is accepting your thoughts and emotions, like really using, you know, all the skills. There's so many different things, labeling, noticing your thoughts, noticing and naming different stories you have in your head, seeing your emotions as like a separate entity from you and your body. You know, there's just so many different ways that we can accept our thoughts. Doesn't mean giving up. It doesn't mean like letting them wash over and take over. It means seeing them, giving them a seat at the table, but not engaging them in conversation, which is one of my favorite metaphors. And then once you're able to do that, you can have that clarity to be like, okay, I've accepted my thoughts. I'll let them sit there. But like, what do I actually want to do in this moment? Like, how do I act based on my values even while I'm anxious? And that's really where the values come back. And you know, don't have to have, I think one of the biggest things that I've taken away is like, you don't have to have this like mindset of like, I have discipline, I have willpower. Like it starts with behavior change. And then that very much influences what your mindset ends up kind of being, right? Every time you say, yeah, I'm anxious, but I'm going to do this thing that scares me anyways, you develop a resilient and confident, courageous mindset. And like, yes, it has to start with courage, but that builds on itself over time. So I just think that can really lead into like long-term planning for goals, long-term planning just for like being happy on a day-to-day basis and really focusing on like the day-to-day moment-to-moment. Like that's my biggest takeaway is like that is every single person makes choices every single day and they're either aligned with their values or not. And that is either going to lead them to a fulfilling, happy life or not, you know? So I think all of that is so interwoven into everyone's day-to-day life. And it's really goes beyond just, you know, people that are diagnosed with OCD.
For sure. And I'm going to ask, as like I'm sitting here pondering all of this, I've had a lot of coffee and I posted on social media today that like, I feel like it's just one of those days where it's almost like a little bit of mania. Like I just have so many ideas and I'm like so passionate about them. And like the ideas are just firing, dude. And I'm going to ask you a question that I don't think that anyone could have been prepared for because I don't even know what my response would be.
Yeah.
If this is, and I totally agree with you, like if this is what we should have been taught, right? Like to handle our discomfort and to make choices out of our values. And instead of, you know, rushing to overeat or rushing to do this compulsion or rushing to call the doctor or rushing to ask for reassurance from somebody, like whatever it is, not just OCD. If that's what we want people not to do, we want them to feel, right? And just like, let yourself feel the way that you feel. Let yourself feel the way that you feel. Make a space, really, right? And that's what ACT is all about, making space for the feelings and the internal experiences that you have without judgment, without having to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think where do you think we went wrong? Like, yeah, where do you think we went wrong as far as like therapists and their training? Where do you think we went wrong just as like a society or how we are taught as children from our parents or whatever? Like, I know my mom, just in her teaching of me and like seeing her with Eli, anytime that my son is upset, she like is quick to distract him. Yep. She goes immediately for, you know, telling him that everything is going to be okay. And it's like, oh my gosh, not everything needs to be distracted from. Like, you just need to let him be. It's okay that he's scared to sleep in his own bed for the first night. Like, that's to be expected. You don't have to spray a bunch of monster spray and read him an extra story and reassure him that you're going to go in there and check on him every, like, it's okay that he's scared. Like, that, like, fear is not going to hurt him, right?
Totally.
Where do you think we went wrong? Like, if this is what we should have been being taught all along, as like a society and as clients in therapy, like where did we go wrong?
Yeah, that's a super interesting question. I think it's really cultural. I think especially in the American culture and other Western cultures, there's so much emphasis on individualism, on being the best. Like I was actually just reading the book Self-Compassion, which is great. And it talked a lot about how like it's like 80% of people report being above average in their work performance. And it's like, that's impossible. Like it would be 50% if that was true. And it's just such an ingrained part of our culture that like we are supposed to be above average, right? Like in high school, we're like doing all these, you know, prep for SATs and like trying to get good grades to get into college, and we're trying to get into the best colleges. And when we're kids, we're trying to be the best at all these sports and everything. And I think so much of that comes along with not being honest and not accepting that sometimes we're not the best. Sometimes we hurt, and that's okay. And I think also Russ Harris actually talks about this with his his book, The Happiness Trap. He talks about myths around happiness. I'm actually just going to look them up right now because they're really interesting. But yeah, he talks about how basically people assume happiness is this natural state, and it's not. And happiness shouldn't be the goal to begin with, but that's what we're taught, right? Because that is what's been seen as the ideal, is having this idyllic, happy life. When in reality, we are all anxious, we are all unhappy, we all have situations that are hard. And I think just from a cultural level, that's not what you're supposed to show. Even Instagram, right? Instagram's the highlight reel. And then also happiness even means feeling good. Living a rich, full, meaningful life it comes with difficulties. It comes with good times and bad times. But again, we're taught, because of, I think, the way that, our society is, we should be the best. We should have a shiny life, and that's what we should put forward. And then if you're not happy, you're somehow defective, which again, pain is human. It's normal. So I think it does come down a lot to culture. I think there's also a generational aspect to it as well. I've had so many conversations with my mom about how, we were raised and how she was raised and how it was so much of what you're talking about. It's it's okay. You don't have to be worried unless I'm worried. And obviously, my mother is amazing. She was doing what she thought was right, but it was just, that was what you were supposed to do, right? Even today with, I see so much on Instagram, no hate, but I see so much on Instagram for therapists and stuff that are oh yeah, when you're anxious, just put an ice pack on you, or
I immediately unfollow.
Oh, 100%. Or positive thinking, replace your negative thoughts with positive ones. And it's no, that's not doing anything for you.
And I'll probably get so much hate for it. And that's fine. That's fine. But I immediately unfollow. That to me is lazy therapy.
100%.
That to me is a therapist who hasn't defined for themselves their own niche. As therapists, and I have been out of grad school since, 2014. Mm-hmm. We were never taught to find a niche or to, hone in our expertise in this area. We were taught very generally, how to, give unconditional positive regard and non-judgment and be mindful of your facial expressions and so on and so forth, right? Ethics. But unless you went out of your way to find that expertise and do research on it and make sure internships aligned with that and make sure that your first job during grad school aligned with that and that every, homework assignment and research paper that you did aligned with that, you just come out of grad school kind of being at this jack of all trades. And that's really dangerous. That's really dangerous. If somebody came to me wanting therapy for depression or an eating disorder or just grief or general life stuff, I would be totally practicing outside of my expertise. I feel it would be unethical for me to be able to support that person. I hope that one day we get to a place with mental health that almost mimics the medical model where you have to choose an expertise. You have to choose, a category of conditions like obsessive compulsive and related conditions. That would be tricky, obviously, because that's always changing with the DSM. But we are doing people a disservice by just having these blanket kind of recommendations for people for what can be very nuanced problems. Mm-hmm. Yeah, immediate unfollow. To me, that's lazy therapy. To me, it's uninformed therapy. You're speaking to the masses. And if you're speaking to the masses, you're speaking to nobody. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we, you and I, through our advocacy or through my work, right? We have to undo that. We have to almost convince people that, no, I know that this is what you see every day on social media. I know that this is what you were taught for the last 15 years in therapy, but it's not working for you. You need to do the opposite instead. Yeah, I hate it. People love when I tell this story. When I worked at my residential facility for 8 or 9 years, anytime that anybody on the unit had an ice pack with them, this like mass, like over the speakers, like mass email went out to everybody from the director, the clinical director. And he needed us all to like immediately go to our offices, and we needed to confirm via email that this person like actually got that ice pack from the nurse's office.
Wow. Yeah. And
because he felt so strongly, he was like, nobody in this, and it was OCD and anxiety. It was OCD and anxiety. We did exposure and response prevention. Granted, that was so many years ago. That was a long, long time ago for me. So it was even more traditional back then.
Mm-hmm.
A lot less integrated than we would see now with like ACT and other things. But he like made us drop everything as a unit, and we needed the nurse's confirmation that this person got the ice pack.
Wow.
From the nurse, like from a burn or something like that, because he was like, absolutely not. Like, no one will be walking around here with breathing into a paper bag. No one will be walking around here with an ice pack. It's not happening. And it's really powerful, right? Like,
yeah.
When people are just like advocating for that on social media, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah. No, I think that's amazing. And like, it's really funny you say that, because I actually, when this whole situation was happening in September of 2022, I actually was hospitalized for it. And I was having like an anxious episode. And this was in a non-OCD unit, but it was at McLean, which is like known for OCD treatment. And yeah, one of the nurses like gave me an ice pack to help with my anxiety. And it's like, looking back, it's like, I just had no idea. It's like, even in those types of facilities with that amount of resources, that's still the prevailing wisdom. But I do think it's almost good, I think, that it goes against traditional advice, because I think it catches people's attention. When I can explain something like, you know, the anxiety cycle, and people have this light bulb moment of like, oh my God, by deep breathing, by using an ice pack, or by trying to do any other avoidant coping mechanisms, I am actually making my anxiety worse. And this is why. Like, I think that that becomes so powerful, because people really do have all of these like aha moments. And I mean, again, I do think it's somewhat generational. I'm hoping that, you know, within our generation and behind us, that like we are learning more that it's okay to be unhappy, and you can just sit with your thoughts, and you don't have to like, you know, have this like shiny, happy, you know, view on everything. So I do think it's somewhat generational, definitely cultural. And I'm hoping that that is changing. And obviously, like, I hope to, along with you and everyone else talking about this stuff, be a part of that.
Mm-hmm. And I want to underscore again that everything that we're talking about, it's not just for people who have OCD and anxiety. So this is for people who have, you know, just like no diagnosis whatsoever. Just even people who are like generally happy and generally high functioning, like we all as human beings are going to be better off if we adopt some of these mindsets and some of these strategies and some of these day-to-day kind of tactics, right? And if we can just get super practical here, like super bullet point, I love bullet points. I love good takeaways. Let's agree on like a list of like at least five things that are typically thought of as being like, you know, suited for OCD or anxiety treatment, but that everybody can benefit from. And I think just speaks volumes to the fact that this is not an OCD and anxiety problem. This is not an intrusive thought problem. This is a radical transformation and lifestyle change that people need to have when they go through these treatment experiences. Like, we are not here to solve relationship OCD. We are not here to solve the issue of whether you hit someone in that hit and run. We're not here to solve that problem. My hope, obviously, is that you, with all the work, the byproduct of that work is that you come to have clarity about that situation, and that you come to feel better about that situation as a byproduct of having done the work. But, you know, it's a lifestyle, guys. This is a lifestyle to do all these things on a day in and day out basis. And I think when people think that, they think like, oh my gosh, it's so much work. It's not work. It just ends up being your lifestyle. Like, it's not work for me to make the decision to just use my headphones the way that I want them and eat, you know, have my coffee in the coffee shop. It's not work for me to decide to, you know, take that left turn and go and get the freaking coffee instead of just like going back and forth about it. It's work to continue to let OCD and anxiety and fear and doubt run the show. Like, that's work. And eventually doing these things, it just becomes your personality. It just becomes your values. Like, this and living this way becomes in and of itself its own value. Like, I value manning my own ship. I value, you know, not letting fear dictate my decisions. I value getting stronger with every decision that I make. Like, that in and of itself, it just becomes second nature. So What would be like five strategies that we would typically reserve for OCD or anxiety treatment, but that you think are like sweepingly relative and relevant to everybody in general?
Totally. Yeah. I think my favorite one, which I stole from The Happiness Drop, I've like reworked it a little bit, but he talks about dropping anchor and the idea of like you're in a storm on a boat and there's nothing you can do, but you can drop an anchor and then you can kind of like ride it out and ground yourself through that anchor. I actually like it with this metaphor of like, I actually just put an Instagram up about this today, but if you're lost in the woods, you don't have any cell phone battery left, you know, your natural response would be to like run around and try to find a trail or try to find someone to help. But what you should actually do is stay put so that people can look for you and find you and they don't have to like double back to find you. And I think that applies super well to just the idea of like, when you have an anxious thought, your first reaction is, I should ruminate, I should rationalize, I should do coping mechanisms. But actually like staying put, staying and grounding yourself in that thought is what can help you. So I came up with my little acronym for it, stay put, P-U-T. So P is practice curiosity, really having, and this can apply literally in every single moment of your life for any situation. I'll give you an example. My friend, and it was really minor, it was not a big deal. But in that moment, I was like, okay, stay put. And I said to myself, like, what are you feeling? Practice curiosity. What are you feeling? What are you thinking? Identify, notice a name. I'm having the thought that I'm anxious right now and that this is a scary situation. And then use your body. So like any way you can just remind yourself, like I'm in control of my body, as you know, simple as blinking your eyelids or like moving your fingers, straightening up your spine. It reminds you that like you are in control and you can control your actions. And then the last piece is take stock in what's around you. So that's that T of like, what is happening in the outside world? What is going on outside of my anxious mind? You know, what are the things I can see that maybe are of a certain color, or, you know, just noticing what is happening around you, like taking notice of that can help really ground you in the outside world and get outside of your anxious mind. So I think that first and foremost, that's like my fault. Like if all else fails, I'm like, okay, stay put. Like do your curiosity, use your body, take notice of what's around you. Like I think that is like numero uno in my book as far as like just having a really good like fallback for any situation. So I'd say that's probably number one. Number two, I think is like really, I mean, I harp about this all the time, but like values. Like I think it's so important to know your values. Like identifying them, understanding where they play out in your life, how you both are living by them and not living by them, and then like what you can do to fill that congruency gap, I guess you could call it, is just, I think, so huge. Like that is, it doesn't mean you're happy all the time. It means that you are living aligned with the way that you want to be living, the way that you want to show up on a day-to-day basis. So that would be number two. And then I don't know, I'm going to have you help me a little bit. I think a third one for me is like what I was talking about before with like your behavior drives your long-term mindset. It's not the other way around. And there's so many people that show up on social media and are like, you have to have discipline. You have to have, you know, this, you know, really like intense mindset to be able to show up and to do what you want on a day-to-day basis. For me, I look at it the opposite. Like I can have courage to take that small choice that I don't want to take because it's scary. And then that makes me more resilient over time. That gives me more willpower. That gives me a sense of confidence and courage. And I think so many people get caught up with like, oh God, I have to like become confident or become courageous before I change my life. And it's like, no, it's actually like the opposite.
Right.
So those would be three for me. And you have any idea?
Yeah, I can come up with two. So I think that's a really good start. And I love your stay put method. Like totally 100% agree. We'll use that myself for sure. I think a fourth one that I would add would be, you know, doing scary things because, you know, just that it's the integrous thing to do, right?
Yeah.
Like, I hate when people take the easy way out.
Yeah.
Like, to all of the kind of like unseen backlash that happens when you take the easy way out, that makes me so sad for people. There's so much goodness that can happen from doing hard things. And this is the whole like impetus of why I titled the podcast this way. I remember I had a client who like she was really struggling, like meant all the good in the world, like, but she just really didn't value doing hard things. Like she had asked me, you know, if I could have things more easily, if I could do things an easier way, like why wouldn't I do it the easy way? And I remember exactly where we were. Like she was sitting on my like office step and I remember exactly where she was off my right. And it was one of those moments where I had so much to say, but also one of those moments where I had nothing to say. Because like, I don't even know where to start. And so I was like, well, I'm just going to make a whole fucking podcast about it. But it's good to do hard things. And I'm not saying like, oh yeah, just go like roll around in the snow in a bikini because it's good to do hard things. Oh. No, like things that are aligned with your values, like you've talked about, right? Like it's good to do hard things. Like my husband right now, we are in the middle of him potentially like joining my business. And he's really afraid to like leave his job because of like logistical things like health insurance and benefits and so on and so forth. But he's not happy where he's at. And so I'm over here like, just do what you want. Do what's oriented towards your values, even if it's really scary. Do the hard thing.
Totally. And
goodness that can come from doing hard, scary things. You gain that confidence. And even if it doesn't work out, you gain information. Like you literally can't fail in life if you quit. Like everything else is just information collecting. So
yeah. And when you open yourself up to that failure, that's the shift, right? Like the idea of everyday exposure and saying like, yeah, it might fail. Like what is life if not that, right? Is like being willing to fail, because otherwise you're just putting yourself in this tiny box.
What a beautiful life that people can have when they're not afraid of that, right? Like what a beautiful life and freedom filled life that people can have if they aren't afraid of hard things, if they aren't afraid of the emotional discomfort that comes with doing hard things. Like if you can make yourself bulletproof to that, you're unstoppable. Like you can literally have whatever you want in life. And then the fifth one I think would be similar, right? They're all very similar, but different, would be to prioritize the long-term gain over the short-term benefit. Like I think this is, again, like one major difference where I'm so much different from my mom. And my mom, like, she's amazing, but she also was born in a different generation, right? Like like everything is just so much different. I, almost to a fault, and I took an Enneagram. I'm like a big Enneagram 8, and I do a lot of work with my Enneagram. It's just like when I'm like laying in bed, like I just love to ponder about my Enneagram. And one of those things was that the Enneagram lives so much in the future, like to a fault, almost so much in the future. And I'm like, that is so me. Like, I am so oriented to the future. Like, I am constantly, again, almost to a fault, wanting to do things for my future self. Like, so much so that I have a hard time being in the present sometimes because I'm so much like, okay, I need to do this now for my future self. I need to do this now for my future self. And so maybe not go to the extreme that I do, but be willing to make space for the short-term discomfort for the long-term gain. Yep. Like just because something is difficult in the short term doesn't mean that it's bad. It doesn't mean that it's wrong. It just means that it's different. And sometimes that's good, especially if that different is going to get you out of an uncomfortable, like in a bad way situation, you know? So the two that I would add would be to challenge yourself and like effortfully do hard things. Yep. And then the fourth one would be related to that, which is to prioritize the long-term benefit versus the short-term gain, because very few worthwhile things in life are going to be immediately gratifying, right?
100%. Yeah. No,
even like brushing our teeth, like we don't do that because it feels good in the moment. I mean, maybe a portion of it does, but we do that so that we don't have cavities and so that we have better breath, right? Like we do that for the long-term benefit. And, you know, I think about it all the time. My son at night, right? Like he wants to stay up. It's 8 o'clock and he wants to stay up and he wants to chat and he wants to watch one more TV show. And it's like, of course, I would love for you to stay up and watch one more TV show, but I don't want you to be tired tomorrow and the next day and the next day, right? Like that to me is love.
Yeah.
To do the hard thing now. And this can be self-love that we direct towards ourselves, or it can be love that we show someone else. Love to me is I'm willing to do the hard thing now so that it gets better in the future. Like, I love you, Eli, so much that I'm willing to put you to bed right now, even though I want you to stay up. I want to spend time with you. I love you so much that I'm willing to put you to bed right now so that you're not tired tomorrow. I'm willing to wake up at 5:15 in the morning. It's uncomfortable and I want to snooze, of course, but I love myself. That is the loving thing to do the hard thing now so that at my podcast with Elise later at 11:30, I have all these ideas because I've gotten so much done and I'm feeling fired up, right? Like, do the hard thing now and prioritize your long-term benefit over the short-term. That would be the number two for me.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I think something that probably can really widely apply to a lot of people too, and like I completely struggle with this, is like overeating, right? Like that is such a good example of that, with like in the short term moment, and like obviously if you have eating disorders and stuff, like this doesn't apply, but like in the short term moment, like I want, you know, to eat something that I know isn't healthy for me when I have a better option. But in the long term, that is making you more unhealthy. Like things like that, you know, like even just like when you're in a fight with like a friend or something, right? And like short term, it might feel really, really hard to like reach out to them and have a tough conversation to try to, you know, fix the fight. But in the long term, like, are you going to be happy just being mad at them forever? Or are you going to want to fix that relationship because it brings you a lot of value? Like there, I mean, with kids too, right? Like the whole like idea of like a hissy fit. I think you were actually talking about this in your last podcast with the extinction burst.
Probably.
Yeah. How like, you know, you've always given the kid the candy and then you don't give it to them. And then they have like a hissy fit about it. And then if you were to give it to them, that just like raises the threshold to say like, okay, now not when you ask for it, but when you have a hissy fit or a temper tantrum, now you get the candy. And it's like, no, in the short term, it sucks that you have to tell your kid, like, you can't get this candy that you want. But in the long term, you're both helping their behavior by not just assuming that having a temper tantrum will give them what they want. You're also making them healthier. And I mean, that's just like, I could go on and on because it is so, so applicable. Like doing scary things, everyday exposure, you know, building that sort of like long-term versus short-term view, being in the moment, you know, knowing that you have tools in your toolbox to accept your anxiety. There's just all these concepts that I just like, I really honestly feel like ERP and ACT should be like required learning.
For
like every friggin' human on earth.
Yeah. I think ERP sometimes gets a bad rap, especially like, and I love ICBT. I love it. But I don't know. I am aware of how I come up. I think that I lean obviously much more ERP, but ERP to me isn't like this manualized process where we just do exposures and we work on this hierarchy and you have to do these things and we don't talk about them. Like, I'm so much more integrated than that, I've come to find. Like, I love ACT. I love the cognitive piece. I love talking about motivation. I talk about self-compassion. Like, ERP, like when you say, oh, ERP and ACT should be just like general standardized learning, I totally agree. Someone out there is going to be like assuming that you mean ERP in the very manualized way. Right. And that's how I talk about ERP.
Same.
To me, ERP is three things. It's pushing yourself outside of your comfort zone. It's reducing your compulsions or safety behaviors and reducing avoidance. Like, to me, that's ERP.
100%. And like, is that not applicable to every single human?
100%. Like,
push yourself out of your comfort zone. Don't try to avoid it and don't do things to like make yourself feel better because it's just going to make you more miserable.
Not only is that necessary, and I 100% stand by that. Not only does that make ERP and our definition necessary for people who have OCD and anxiety, it's necessary for a meaningful and freedom filled life.
100%. Could not agree more. Yeah. There's just, again, I could go on and on about this. There's just so much. With, I think this goes back to like what we've talked about too, with generalized anxiety disorder and OCD being seen as these very discrete things. When, you know, I'd go even further and say that like, yes, being diagnosed is super important to get the treatment you need, but like, really, who cares if it's OCD versus GAD versus just like you are a person that gets anxious a lot, if at the end of the day, the techniques to treat it are largely the same, right? Like,
whatever. I mean, our goal is to get people to be only as anxious as the facts warrant.
Right.
And I mean, obviously that's like a big vague thing. Like, oh, what do the facts warrant? My goal is to get people to only be as anxious as the facts warrant. And I don't care how we get there, but it's gotta be more than just a coping skill here and there. It's gotta be less about just getting through the moment and more about like this radical life and mental attitude transformation that will last forever.
100%. Yeah. And like so much of what I have learned, I've I'm someone that when I become obsessed with something, I can't help but share it with like every human being that I talk to. And it's really, you know, it's helped a lot of my friends and family. Like a lot of people in my family, we are crazy overachievers and like we all have these obsessive behaviors and like it's helped them and they've never been diagnosed with anything. So yeah, it's really just a mindset shift for the long term. It's not just treating acute symptoms.
For sure. I love this conversation. Oh my gosh, I could go on forever.
I know, same.
I could go on forever, but maybe we will one day. Maybe we will one day, like at a conference or something.
That would be amazing. Oh my God. Maybe we will. So, CDF panel. Yeah. Are you?
That would be so fun. So, Elise, I'm going to put all of your links and where people can find you in the show notes, but I would love for you just verbally to give yourself a little shout out. Where can people find you? And you have an awesome free resource that I want people to check out right after this podcast. So tell us all about those things.
Totally. So my Instagram is at ocd.or.just.me. So it's just OCD or just me with dots in between. And then, yeah, my free resource, it really talks all about what I've already been talking about. It's a way for you to go through a big, long list of values, identify what matters most to you, where you're kind of like living with those values, where you're not, setting goals around how you might meet those. And then it talks about that stay put method as well. So yeah, it's totally free. And I think it really could be a useful resource. So you can go to the link in my bio and get that for free and download it. And yeah, just follow along. Like I said, I have some exciting projects coming up. So yeah, hope to continue with the momentum that I got going and just continue to be a part of this amazing community and get this message out there to everybody. Everybody in the whole damn world needs this message.
I love it. I love it so much. Elise, thank you so much for being here. And to all of you listening, I hope that you found this helpful. I will put everything in the show notes. Make sure to give her a follow. If you love my stuff, you will love her stuff. So thank you guys for listening. I will see you next week. Until then, keep doing all the hard things. Thank you so much for listening to my podcast. It would mean the world to me if you would take a quick minute to please give it a review. And while you're at it, check out my website at www.jennaoverbaughlpc.com to sign up for my free email newsletter that includes an instant, free downloadable PDF to help jumpstart your OCD and anxiety recovery journey. You can also find me on Instagram or TikTok at jenna.overbaugh. If you liked what you listened to here, you can download some of my workshops and courses on OCD, anxiety, and treatment at my website as well. Thank you so much again for tuning in, and until next time, keep doing all the hard things.